What breed is Pinto?
You know, we're not really sure. His mama looked a little bit like a boxer, but was kind of a little bit skinnier. So like maybe boxer lab.
Yeah. He looks kind of like a hound in the face.
He looks a little houndy. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But mama didn't look hound at all. So we never really know. That's kind of the fun of adopting a rescue dog.
Right,
it's a little
bit of
adventure to see how big they grow and what they look like.
Hello and welcome to the Real Estate Wine and More podcast. I'm Howard Fletcher, and you know I love animals, but at my core, I'm a dog person. And my guest today is a dog advocate. So go get yourself a treat and let's get started. Here we go, Russ. Let's go.
Why don't I go downtown for a bucket of neck bone? Mac and cheese in a side of me. I want to go downtown for a bucket of neck bones. They're right next door to the Tasty Free.
Stephanie Arrington started her journey into animal welfare with a deep desire to help animals in need. After completing her master's degree in couple and family therapy from one of the finest institutions of higher learning in the country, the University of Maryland at College Park. Yeah, I'm a terp. Stephanie decided that the first thing she was going to do post-college was to adopt a dog, and that's when she found Petey. So I'm going to let her tell you the rest of the story. So with no further ado, here's my conversation with Stephanie Arrington, founder and co-owner of Petey and Friends in Rockville, Maryland. Enjoy. Okay, well, listen, I want to welcome you to the show, Stephanie Arrington.
Stephanie, yeah, thank you.
You are the owner of Petey and Friends.
Yes, I'm the founder. Yes.
Okay. And so tell us what Petey and Friends does and how it came to be.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have, my co-founder and I have been involved in animal welfare for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And we started volunteering with various different rescues in the DC area. As I'm sure you know, there are several. Mm-hmm. And then worked full time for a local rescue for a while. And then decided to kind of branch out and start our own. So Petey and Friends, our mission really is to bring in dogs from high kill shelters and to place them all into foster homes, where we work really closely with our foster families to do basic assessments with our dogs and try to just learn as much about our animals as we possibly can, so that we can then share that information with prospective adopters so that they feel like they have a really good sense for the animal that they're bringing in. Like they know as much about them as we do. And it just kind of gives them that extra level of confidence in bringing in a new animal. As I know, it can often be a very stressful transition period for folks, but ultimately ends up being, of course, a wonderful experience for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you knew, we probably do by now, how I came to know about you. You know, I have a rescue dog, Jack, the black pug, who my listeners know, I thank him every show. And I've had him for about 7 years. He's getting a little up in age now. And I was looking for another dog to bring in as a companion to him and to me and my mother. And so I saw the great work that you do. And I also saw, when I went to your website, that you are a fearless terp like myself. So
I
always want to call up the terps so I can find out.
Yeah.
Tell me this. What should people ask, and I'll get back to you, but I really wanted to get this information out there. What should people ask themselves before they go out and look to adopt a dog? I know the thought of adopting an animal is attractive to a lot of people who like animals, but what should they really be asking themselves before they decide to take that step?
Yeah. So I always tell folks to really just sit down with your family or whoever else lives in the household and really think about, you know, what you're looking for in an animal, how much time you can dedicate, how long are the walks going to be, who's doing the walks, who's going to feed, who's going to bathe, who's going to snuggle with, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's important that everybody is kind of on board and understands how big the responsibility is, and that you have an idea of who's taking on that responsibility, so that you have a good kind of understanding of what type of animal or how old the dog should be, if it should be a puppy, if it should be an adult dog, really how much time you have to dedicate as a family really helps us to determine what dog is going to be a good fit for you. And it just really depends on the family and kind of what you're willing and able to do. I think we can find a match for everybody, but it just kind of depends, depends on the individual for sure.
Yeah, well, I started going through your process, and I had an interview with Ariel, who is, I think, is that your partner in the,
yes,
in the business?
Yes, that's my co-founder.
Yeah, co-founder. And I was very impressed with the questions that I was asked. Now, I went through the shelters to get Jack, Montgomery County Shelter, and they, I guess, with as much volume as they do as good a job as they can. I mean, they did come to the house and inspect and, you know, wanted everybody who lives in the house. Luckily, I only have one other person who lives with me to interact with the dog. Didn't have another dog at the time. But, you know, Ariel was, you know, talking of asking questions about, you know, our yard, our house, how, what kind of personality we were looking for in the dog, how active we wanted it to be. Did we have a problem with noises in the house, all that type of thing, which I thought was really great, because I do know, unfortunately, and I know this is probably why you ask those questions of people who have thought, oh, it's, I'm going to go adopt a dog, and they just grab the first dog they see that they think is cute, and it doesn't really work out. And they end up, you know, taking the dog back or, you know, not keeping the dog, which is never good for the dog.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as long as the individuals have a firm understanding of what they're able to commit to, it really helps us to help to match them, right? Mm-hmm. So we try to learn as much about the animals as possible so that when we are having those conversations, we can kind of steer folks in the right direction or offer suggestions or recommendations should they have a dog specifically in mind that they're interested in.
Now, you mentioned high kill shelters, like you get your animals or you try to get your animals from them. Define that term for me. What is a high kill shelter?
Yeah. So oftentimes the high kill shelters are those shelters that end up having to euthanize due to lack of space within the facility. So it's often in very rural areas where spay and neutering doesn't happen as often as it happens here. And so you end up with a lot of stray animals and not that many adoptions happening. So because there's a larger number of the stray population than there are people adopting, they just don't have enough traffic and therefore end up having to euthanize perfectly adoptable animals simply because they just don't have the space or the ability to care for them. So many rescues in more populated areas such as DC and other big cities will pull dogs from those locations. And we pull from North and South Carolina, West Virginia, Puerto Rico. Texas is a big one. So lots of those places where there just aren't that many adopters. And we have a lot of adopters here, luckily, so we can kind of help to support them in that way.
So that's a statistic that's available to the public. I mean, how do you know they're a high kill shelter?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. So there are statistics out on the internet about which shelters have to euthanize for space. Now, I think most of them do the best that sure. they possibly can to partner with rescues so that they don't have to be a high kill shelter, right? Like they don't want to do that, but oftentimes they just don't have the resources. And so oftentimes those folks will reach out to us and help to arrange for transporting the animals and really do everything that they can as much as possible to help to support us in bringing the animals up as well. So they try to make it easy for us to help them as well.
A neighbor up the street has a Katrina dog that they got from yep. Hurricane Katrina. How often are dogs abandoned or orphaned or whatever term you want to use because of natural disasters? Does that happen more often than we know? You know, I think of the big ones like Katrina and obviously the hurricane down in Puerto Rico, but is that a very common occurrence?
Yeah, I think a lot of times what ends up happening is when folks kind of become displaced from their homes and their families, they just don't have the ability to care for their animals anymore. And that's when we see kind of larger numbers of animals getting turned into shelters. And mm-hmm. that's simply just because people don't have the resources to care for them or the the space, right? Oftentimes shelters won't allow animals in their facilities because they have to make space for the people. So we do tend to see higher numbers, and there are several organizations that work specifically with areas that have experienced natural disasters in order to help to support them, the animal population there that is kind of left abandoned and homeless as well.
I noticed when I went to get Jack, and also now that I'm looking for another dog, there seems to be a large population of pit bulls out there. It looks like that's probably, is that the largest number? It seems like every shelter is overpopulated with pit bulls and pit bull mixes. Is that, would I be correct in saying that?
Yeah, unfortunately, the problem with pit bulls is that they get such a bad reputation and people end up lumping them into this aggressive breed. And especially in areas like DC and places where folks are renters, you know, there are so many breed restrictions and pit bulls are always included in those lists. So if you live in an apartment or even some homeowners, if they have homeowners insurance, will oftentimes deny you or jack up your insurance fees because you own a pit bull, you know, and I think it just makes it harder for them to get adopted. So, you know, a tiny fluffy, like little shih tzu or something right. like that will get adopted significantly faster because folks who are renters, you know, it's easy for landlords to accept those animals and they do so way more willingly than they would a larger breed dog or specifically a pit bull. So I think there are a lot of people that believe in the stereotypes, and we try really hard to combat that. Of course, Petey's a pit bull, and we have a lot of pit bulls on our site, as I'm sure you'll see. But, you know, it is significantly harder to get them adopted. There are a lot of restrictions on folks, and also the stereotypes. People, like, really believe in them and have a hard time kind of getting past that.
Yeah, I had my roommate in college had a pit bull. Who was named Rock. She was darling. So I do understand about them being a very, you know, it depends on how they're raised as far as their personality is concerned. I never considered that it was a demand issue. I, you know, when I saw that, and I guess maybe it's because I projected this on the pit bull owners, maybe unfairly, I thought it was a supply side thing. Like, boy, they bred all these dogs for fighting and now they're, you know, the shelters are overrun, but if no one is adopting them, that's another reason why they, you know, have that high population. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if we get pit bull puppies, those tend to take longer to be adopted than really any other breed of puppy. Mm-hmm. So it's quite the reality, unfortunately, for pit bulls. And, you know, we live in Montgomery County, but in Prince George's County, they're banned in the entire county. So anybody who owns the pit bull there, it's illegal, and the animal control officers can just take your animal away from you. So, wow. You know, it's not just apartment complexes and landlords and things like that. It's also policies that really need to change in order to help support these animals that are sitting in shelters that are wonderful family pets. They just don't get the chance to be.
And we'll be right back after this short break. Hey folks, I just want to take a moment to let you know about some of the other projects I'm working on, and I also want to let you know how you can reach me in case you know of someone who's thinking of buying or selling a home. Many of us only go through the home buying process once or twice in our lifetime, so oftentimes knowing what to do in order to get the best price for your home or understanding how to obtain financing or negotiating a winning purchase contract can feel like a puppy without a friend to raise them or a stray lost on the side of the road without a professional to assist you, you know, you could be at the mercy of a predatory market. You see what I'm doing there? You see? No? Oh, I tried. Listen, if you know somebody who's thinking of buying or selling a house, just contact me. My name's Howard Fletcher, and my number's 301-233-2845. Or you can email me at howard@kw.com. My contact information is on the show notes. I've been helping my clients buy and sell property in the Washington metropolitan area for over 20 years, so that's more than once or twice. And I've matched up my happy clients with good buyers and great sellers, just like Stephanie does with her doggies. Yeah, I'm still trying to make that analogy work. As you can see, I don't give up easily. I also want you to catch me and my buddy Aaron Couch breaking down all 60 episodes of HBO's The Wire while highlighting and drinking bottles of wine made by the best winemakers in the DMV. So our podcast is naturally called Vino and Convo with Fletch and Couch. You can find it on whatever platform you use to get this podcast or anywhere else you can get quality podcasts. Check us out. You won't be disappointed. If nothing else, you'll be able to hear Aaron smoke cigars and talk about how smart he thinks Avon Barksdale is. So that's it. I think I'm done. Let's get back to the show. I know that some of the dogs that are up for adoption have medical issues. And I wanted you to speak to that because I think that might also be a stigma on some dogs. And, you know, when I adopted Jack, I used to have Basset Hounds. And I didn't go to the shelter seeking out a pug. In fact, I was shocked to find one there. And,
yeah.
I knew I needed a smaller dog because of, my mother is older and that would, I didn't want to have a really strong dog around the house that she couldn't handle. So that's how I ended up with Jack. And when I told people I was going to adopt or I had adopted this pug, the first thing out of their mouths sometimes, half the time, was, oh, they have breathing problems. Oh, they have this, you know, these medical issues, which, I mean, Jack doesn't seem to have any more medical issues than any other dog I've had, than any of the hounds. But it did seem like those people would never have touched a pug because they thought there was this association with a bad medical history or something. So what would you tell people when they go out and look for a dog and they find out that this dog might have some sort of medical issue? What would be your advice to them?
Yeah, I think for many folks who are doing research on specific breeds, you know, if they are bred and if they're not bred well, then animals do tend to have certain medical issues, right? The pug has the really short, stumpy nose and like the short, round body. And so there are medical issues that come with that. But we work with rescue dogs, right? So we just don't know what breed is in there. And oftentimes we find that, you know, when you mix the breeds, they tend to be healthier and have less of those well-known medical issues, you know, like labs get arthritis because, you know, if they're bred over and over again, they kind of tend to have the same medical issues. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that we don't see medical issues in rescues. Of course we do, just like any other animal. But, you know, I think it's just really important to be consistent in your vetting, take them every single year, make sure that they're on their preventatives, make sure you're feeding them good food. And that's as much as you can do, right? We can't predict the medical issues that will happen in the future, but we do definitely provide veterinary care for all of our animals as they need it. That come through the rescue. And there are, you know, there are common medical issues that we do deal with in rescue, things like heartworm positive dogs, things like mange, things like worms, you know, things like that, that are fairly common in rescue dogs, but they're all treatable and we treat them so that by the time they get into their adopters' homes, they're often ready to go and healthy. So yeah, I think medical issues can be really scary for folks who are looking to adopt because it can be a big financial commitment. But, you know what we know and we share that information to the best of our abilities. And then, you know, if anything happens down the road, we can definitely help to support by providing veterinary resources and things like that.
So tell me the story of Petey. I see that your place is named after Petey and Petey is your dog, I'm assuming.
Yes, he is.
Tell me about that. Tell me about Petey.
Yeah. So I grew up wanting a dog, just like I think most children. and I lived in an apartment that did not allow it. So I went to Maryland and did my undergrad and graduate degree there and promised myself that my first gift to myself as an adult was going to be to get a dog. And I was looking for a 2+ year old female, and I ended up with an 8-week-old male, who was Petey. I adopted him from Montgomery County Humane Society, back when they were Montgomery County Humane, now they're McKaysack. He's just my best friend. I mean, he's a wonderful dog and he's definitely a pit bull. And I was way in over my head as a 21-year-old who was adopting an 8-week-old puppy and, you know, struggled just like many first-time adopters struggle with having a young puppy that makes a mess everywhere and gets into everything they're not supposed to, but worked really hard with him to train him up. He has been through various rounds of obedience training. He was actually in a play even.
Wow.
He was in the production of Annie at the Olney Theater about 3 years ago. Yeah, and he played Sandy. And so, you know, I've, you know, worked with him very much, and he's just quite the ambassador for the breed. You know, those folks that say that pit bulls are violent and aggressive, you know, it's just about raising them right and working with them. And I won't ever say that it was easy, but it was definitely worth it. So, you know, and through kind of my time with Petey, we've fostered over 100 animals.
Wow.
And he's kind of been the big brother to all of them. So, you know, I thought it appropriate to name the rescue Petey and his friends, because that's really what this is.
Has Petey ever become attached to one of your one of the fosters and kind of been a little sad to see him go?
Yeah, we have 4 dogs. So, yes. Answer to that is absolutely. And there were some that we just couldn't let go. And most of them did have medical or behavioral issues that made it significantly difficult for them to be adopted out. And we figured, okay, well, we'll keep them and work with them because we can. We have the time and the patience and the knowledge in order to work with them. So yes, there are many fosters that we are sad to see go, but it's wonderful seeing them go into their forever homes. And it always makes it worth the time.
I have to ask you about Petey and Annie, because you're the first person I had known, I've met, who had a dog that actually was a performing dog. How often, how many performances was that? I mean, just guesstimate. Oh,
it was so much work. I've got to be honest. I mean, those kids, I mean, were there every night from like 7 to 10 for months. Kind of rehearsing and practicing. And I would have to go with Petey, and Petey would rehearse and practice. I think it was probably close to 30 shows.
Wow.
And it was during the holidays. So, right. You know, it was like the, it was kind of the Thanksgiving, Christmas, like end of year show. So it was very popular. And it was probably about 30 shows that he did. He had him and a second dog so that they kind of, they switched roles. And
they looked very similar.
Get breaks. No, they were totally different. One of them was like a doodle, like a curly doodle thing. Okay. And then there was Petey, who was the giant pit bull. but yeah, and we did rehearsals multiple times a week. I want to say 3 or 4 times a week for 3 hours at a time. And he just got to hang out with the kids and absolutely loved it. So he was having a great time. And I just sat there and kind of watched and assisted where I could. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was quite the experience. I think he's retired from showbiz at this point because we're a little busy with the rescue, but it was a really wonderful experience for him.
That sounds like it. Something else that I was impressed, you know, at first I have to tell you the way my thinking goes. So I was speaking to Ariel and she said, well, you know, we do have an obedience school requirement. And so, of course, my first thing was, I don't want to do that. But I am a dog lover. And it does make perfect sense that my first dog was a basset named Cleo. And we adopted Cleo. Cleo was a year old. And she was in an apartment. The people who had her, it was the apartment situation. They got this dog, then they found they couldn't keep her. So we got her and we took her to Wheaton Plaza when it was Wheaton Plaza.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was Wheaton Plaza. Every Saturday morning, I think it was. It was just once a week with about 20 other dogs. And we'd get in that parking lot and walk around with these dogs. And the trainer guy there said, we're going to do the best we can with that dog, but Bassets aren't very obedient, but he did okay. But that's when I bonded with Cleo. I mean, that to tell you the truth, even though it was one day a week, it just seemed as though going through those paces with Cleo really kind of solidified some sort of bond between us. And so that's why I thought that was really a good requirement for you to have for people who adopt.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we do get pushback on that requirement. You know, right now it's a little bit more difficult, of course, because of with the pandemic that we're all kind of experiencing. There's
right.
the Do you do the virtual classes? Do you brave the in-person classes? What does that kind of look like? So, you know, we've been working a lot with folks to kind of determine where their comfort level is and offering suggestions either way. But as I said, with my experience with Petey, you know, it was extraordinarily important for us that we did obedience training. I think it really helps to, like you said, build the bond between you and your dog. It helps to get everybody in the house on board with what the behaviors are, what the commands are, how to communicate appropriately with your dog. Because let's be honest, dog training is a lot about teaching the people.
Oh, yeah.
So that you can teach teach your dog, right? Because it is different. Like, it's a different way of communicating with an animal versus with, you know, your friends and family. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, I do think that, you know, it never hurts to do an obedience class. And also, it's always wonderful to have a trainer that knows you and your dog should any behaviors come up in the future, you know, as you transition from one home to another, maybe from a single person to being a couple to then having a family, right? Transitions are difficult for animals as well. And having a trainer that knows you and knows your dog and has worked with you is just a good person to have in your corner should you start to see issues that start to develop you know, later on as they get older and as they transition through life with you.
So I see you're married, right? Correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
Did you have PD before you met your husband?
I did. Yes.
Okay. And was he the only dog you had at that time?
He was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was a package deal. He had to bring Petey along too. Or did your husband have a dog?
He did. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So we blended.
Sounds like the Brady Bunch.
He had Tilly and I had Petey. And yes. And so we had to make sure that they got along. And that was a really difficult transition because they were both, I mean, I had Petey since he was 8 weeks old and we got married when he was about 5. So He had been the only dog in the home outside of our foster dogs, right? Which were kind of in and out. He always was like, I know they're leaving. Right. But with Tilly, it's like, oh no, she's not leaving,
when's,
right?
When's she going to leave?
Yeah, exactly. I think he still is curious about that.
Yeah.
but yeah, it was definitely a big transition to be a two-dog household, a permanent two-dog household, and making sure that they can kind of get along and learn to coexist. So yeah, I mean, there's lots of transitions that you go through. Dogs can live up to 15, 16, 17, sometimes even 20 years. And there's a lot that happens in that time for us as individuals. So it happens to our dogs as well.
Wow. I started this podcast interviewing winemakers and craft brewers. And that's why, and I sell real estate. So that's why it's called the Real Estate Wine and More podcast. Do you and your husband drink at all?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is where this question's going. Have you gone to any of the local wineries and breweries? Do you have any interest in doing that? Because some are dog friendly and some are not. And so since you're a dog expert, as far as I'm concerned, is there a venue that you visited where you had a particularly good experience with your dog?
Yeah. So our favorite brewery is Seven Locks Brewing. They are absolutely lovely. And every Sunday they allow dogs inside of the brewery. And what's wonderful about them is they also allow us to host adoption events there.
Oh, wow.
So you can bring your dog and then you can also have like a group that's there with adoptable animals. And it's just a really wonderful, fun event. It's a great family friendly brewery as well. There's like games and board games and there's always kiddos running around and it's just such a lovely like place to be and to bring adoptable animals because you hit a population that you maybe normally wouldn't, and also kind of get your name out there. You know, most adoption events are held at pet stores, but you know, it's just a nice change of pace to do them at a brewery. And Keith, who's the owner of Seven Locks, is just always super wonderful and accommodating and allows us to bring our rescue animals and kind of just welcomes us in there. So I highly recommend them as a great dog-friendly brewery. I think right now, they've kind of shut down their parking lot and have everything outdoors.
Yeah.
So they've also kind of figured out how to work with the pandemic, but they've also got wonderful beer.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to get Keith on the show. But I when I knew I was going to interview you, I said, I got to make sure to ask you that because I like dogs. A pug isn't the best dog to take places, especially when it's hot, you know? Yeah. My partner Joan has a Shiba Inu, and Moshi loves that kind of stuff. But like I said, not every place is dog friendly. So,
yeah, I definitely recommend Seven Locks on a Sunday. It's wonderful.
Cool. Okay. Well, Stephanie, how can people get in touch with you or in touch with Petey and Friends? And two things. Well, you do what you want to do. I would imagine you may want not only people to come to adopt, but if, you know, to support your thing. So this is your time to go ahead and whatever you want to promote, please do.
Yeah, so of course, we're always looking for adopters, but our organization cannot run without volunteers, donors, and fosters. The more fosters we have, the more animals we can pull, the more volunteers we have, the more quickly we can move those animals and get new animals in. And of course, donations are always helpful because we are all volunteer-based. We don't have any paid staff. So we can only bring in as many animals as we have the resources to bring in. You can kind of visit our website and read about our mission and how we do things and what our philosophy is. It's www.pdandfriends, and it's FURENDS.org, and everything is there. You can contact us. There's a contact form there. All of our emails are listed. And yeah, that's kind of the best way to see us. We have an Instagram and a Facebook as well. If you prefer those versus a website, but yeah, any help, support, or even just promo that folks can do, sharing our site, just something as small as that is super helpful for us as a brand new rescue in the DC area.
Okay. Well, all that information is going to be in the show notes. And I am looking forward now. I've been approved as an adopter. So I'm looking forward to, seeing what you all can round up for me and find. That dog, the puppy you had at the beginning of the show, what was his name again?
Pinto. Yeah,
Pinto. Now, how large? Running. I know you don't know because you're not quite sure what's in Pinto, but do you have a guesstimate about how large that dog would get to be?
Yeah, luckily with Pinto, we did have the mama. So Mama Ruth has been adopted as well. She was probably about 50 pounds, but I always tell folks, I never guess weight, because when I got Petey, he was 8 weeks old, same age as Pinto, and they told me he was going to be about 40 or 50 pounds, and he's 80. So I hate guessing because, if people are really want a specific weight, then we typically recommend they get a dog that's a little bit older, just because we have a little bit of a better gauge. There's like a landlord restriction on weight, or if they're really looking for something smaller, then we say maybe a little bit older. But yeah, Pinto Bean will probably be a 50-ish pound dog.
Well, when I first started my search, and this isn't advised, I was on Craigslist. I just said, let me go on Craigslist and email a couple of these people. And this guy had this cute little dog. And I could tell it had a little bit of pit in it, but it looked small. So I emailed him. I said, do you have any idea how large this dog will get? He said, well, the father was 120 pounds and the mother was 110. And I was like, no, it's a little bit too big for me. Yeah.
Small horse.
Yeah. I was like, golly, that's huge.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it's kind of hard, right? Because oftentimes when the litters come in, we don't have parents.
Right.
So we're kind of like, I don't know. It's kind of a guess at that point. But, like I said, having a rescue dog is fun because it's a little bit of an adventure to see what they grow into, how big they get and what they look like when they're fully grown, for sure.
Okay. Well, listen, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. We will see how my story ends, but I was quite impressed with your vetting process and the care that your Ariel took in seeing what it was I was looking for. So I really, that's a good start. And I really appreciate it. And I wish you the best.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you so much for your interest in adopting and for having saved a dog from a shelter previously. It's wonderful to be in touch with folks such as yourself that want to help us to save lives.
Okay. All right, Stephanie, thanks a lot. And I will be talking to you guys soon, I hope.
I'm sure. Yeah, take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Real Estate Wine and More podcast. I'd like to thank Stephanie Arrington of PD and Friends for taking a little time out of her busy schedule to sit down and Zoom with me for a few minutes. If you want to contact Stephanie and you want to learn more about the adoption process, take a look in the show notes or just Google pdandfriends.org. I'm sure they will pop up. Speaking of websites, please go to howardfletcher.com, where you can catch my profile of Stephanie along with other profiles of the many faces of the DMV that make it such a great place to live, work, and play. I also need to thank my good friend Russell Tierney for my theme music, Tasty Freeze, which was written and performed by his band Cadillac Grip. If you're ever in Denver or Boulder, Colorado, you gotta go see Cadillac Grip play. Because if you ain't hip to the grip, you just ain't hip. Thank you to my partner Joan, my mother Eva, and Jack the Black Pug.
I would not be possible without you. You all please stay safe, wash your hands, and drink good wine. I'm Howard Fletcher. Thanks for listening. I'll see you soon again. Bye-bye.
Why don't you take me downtown for a buck of the neck bone? They're right next door to the Tasty Free.